Hi, welcome to Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle. I'm an intuitive and energy counselor. And before you meet John Gray, who's got some wonderful information for us as far as relationships and evolution goes, let's all connect with one another. And let's connect with all the various beings of dimensions, of other galaxies and so on, that are surrounding us, that are connecting with us as a world, as a species, in order to help us through these challenges at this time. Remember, the shift is all about us moving through the way we've been, the competitive way we've been, and moving us into the consciousness of oneness, the consciousness of love. And these beings that surround us are going to help us. Let's feel the connection, the divinity in us all, and call in those higher frequency energies through these beings, through the universes, through ourselves, and with a deep breath, breathe it in and then breathe it out over to Japan to support those people and that country with our peace, our love, our healing, and that they can feel loved and supported at this challenging time. Thank you for being our paradigm shifting community. Email me if you have any comments on this show or on what's going on in your world, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. Much love. Good evening, good evening. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you have tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people that I'm selecting and my guides and angels are selecting, who are making a huge difference in the collective consciousness of our species these days. And today we're really honored to have with us John Gray, that he has had a huge impact by writing about Mars and Venus and men and women, and has taught a lot of people about relationships for many years, and has 14 books under his belt, the latest of which is called Why Mars and Venus Collide, Otherwise Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress. So welcome. That was a long preamble, John Gray. How are you?
Very good. Nice to talk to you.
Well, welcome to the show. This book seems to be very, very practical. I really like it. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about how, I mean, we're talking a lot about oxytocin and testosterone. And what I really like about that is it really gives you a sense of the biochemical juice that happens between people. What do you have, some kind of a clinic, or are you been studying hormones? Or?
Well, I do. I actually have a wellness center in Northern California for the last about 6 years, where I have the center. And before that, I was about 4 years before that's when I started doing all this research into our hormonal differences. And now at the universities, there's just huge amounts of research being done on this kind of new discovery that this hormone, oxytocin, that we've always known is associated with childbirth and women's sexual response, climax, is actually the hormone necessary to lower stress in a woman's body. It lowers stress, reduces pain, creates a sense of well-being. It's associated with feeling relaxed and safe, trusting. Whenever a woman's sort of in love, it's because she's feeling a sense of safety and trust, and that's what lowers her stress levels, which is why she feels so good. She has so much energy. And then as stress affects her, it uses up that oxytocin, and then she begins to experience the symptoms of stress, which is often a problem in marriage, because men don't understand how women react to stress, because women react differently. It's like when women are under stress, it's the almost opposite reaction as a man. If a man's under stress, he's going to be tired, he's going to think about his own needs. And to the extent stress is getting the best of him, he'll focus on his own needs and forget everybody else.
That's where he gets in trouble, right?
And what women will tend to do is, under stress, is they're, when it's getting the best of them, they'll tend to think about other people even more. And so they become overwhelmed. And to the extent a woman, in a sense, will say, well, I can't just relax, I have to do all these things. A man will say, well, you know, I have to rest, I can't do anything. And so we get these sort of two reactions. And for men, it's men literally run out of energy to do anything, or motivation to do anything constructive, when their testosterone levels start dropping at the end of the day. They need to you know, rebuild their testosterone. There's ways to do it that men typically do, like sitting on a couch and watching TV, will actually rebuild testosterone levels. Very similar to what a weightlifter would do after a workout, and he's depleted his testosterone as he falls asleep. Rest is the way to rebuild testosterone. But the way to rebuild oxytocin, which is the hormone that helps women cope with stress, is by sharing and communicating, relating, cooperating, commiserating. You know, so if a woman can talk about her day, for example, it's going to cause a lot of oxytocin to be produced.
But the guy can't handle that, right?
Well, if he learns how to do it, that's what my book, it teaches men a way to listen to women that actually raises a man's testosterone levels. And more importantly, this book teaches women how to get a man to listen. Just simple phrases that you use that will, any man, no matter how exhausted or tired he is, if you want a man to listen, what you have to do is simply ask. And you say, look, honey, I know you're really tired. I just want to tell you what went on today. And you don't have to say anything or do anything about it. I just want to sort of download my day, and it will make me feel so much better. And a man will do it. I mean, well, think about what men do when they come home from work. They often just sit and watch the news. We like watching the news as long as we don't have to do anything about it. Well, women love to be the newscaster. I mean, literally, they like to talk about what's going on in their day. So we're really a perfect fit instead of a perfect non-fit.
Oh, yeah, because it does seem like the collision's inevitable when you describe that oxytocin need for community and the male need for being isolated.
That's right. Men want to pull away. But ultimately, what stimulates testosterone is when men can relax and not feel like they have to do something. That will rebuild testosterone, let's put it that way. Mm. That's the relaxation phase. But we relax by hearing about problems that we don't have to solve. And a woman can come up with a whole variety of solved problems that don't even have solutions. And men will actually enjoy listening to it as long as she tells him. She has to remember to tell him, look, I'm just talking about this so that, you know, I feel like I'm not the only one going through my life here. I like to share with you. But you really don't have to do anything about it or say anything or react in any way. And what women don't realize is, first of all, they don't ask. They just expect him to be interested. Second of all, they'll start talking to him. And then after she's talked a little bit, and she'll start asking him questions. And it's like he's, you know, here he is listening, which is what she'd like, and then she punishes him by making him talk.
But she doesn't know that, right?
She doesn't know that, not at all. She actually feels like if she doesn't ask him questions, then she's being rude. I mean, I observe this with my daughters when they're growing up, and still sometimes I hear it from them. They'll often complain about a friend who calls after not calling them for a long time, and they'll be saying things like, oh, she just calls me and she tells me what's going on in her life, and she didn't ask me any questions about me. She's not a friend at all. And it's like she's selfish just to use me as someone to listen to her without asking me questions. So on Venus, it's a, you know, talking is a big premium, being heard. And that's because women instinctively experience that when they share what's going on in their life, they feel better. They feel excited. It feels good. It's comforting. It's relaxing.
So we think that they might want that too.
That's right. That's right. And so if she doesn't seem to encourage it, it might appear like she's being rude or insensitive to him, when really it's a reward to him to just simply say, thanks so much for listening. I feel better. Now, that works a lot of the time. There are some of these guys out there who are big talkers themselves, and that's a huge problem in relationships. You know, often women say, you know, my husband won't talk. I go, great, then he's the easiest one to teach, you know, how to listen. But it's the guys who are talking all the time. You know, women will say, oh, my gosh, he goes on and on and on. I don't even want to talk to him because he talks so much. And it's not a healthy thing when guys do a lot of talking about feelings and problems of the day or whatever. It really just sounds like, you know, this guy's whining and complaining, and it's a big turnoff to women. And this is, unfortunately, a big frustration for these guys because they've sort of been sold this bill of goods that women like men to open up and talk and share. And then once men do it, then women come to me as their therapist and say, gee, you know, I didn't realize he had so many problems. I'm just not turned on to him anymore.
Well, there's another kind, too, the guys who want to teach, so they'll talk for a long time as well.
Yeah, well, that's the point. You know, if she has problems, then he wants to then talk and explain to her why she shouldn't be upset about things and whatever. He's trying to fix it and solve it and whatever. Then there's the other guy. If she has three or four complaints, he'll say, that's nothing, and then he'll over-complain her. You know. And again, you have to realize men are testosterone-oriented. We have to make about 20 to 30 times a day, 20 times to 30 times more testosterone. So, you know, competitiveness is a natural thing with men, you know. And so if she's got complaints, he could get into competing. And I got more complaints. How about that? And it's just, he doesn't realize that he's sabotaging the romance and the relationship, and often making it unsafe and uncomfortable for her to bring up her own issues, because he's always dismissing them by how many issues he's got. And this is why I wrote this book. A big part of it is that today we're under so much stress, and particularly women, and this is a distinction that's important to make, because women will come home and they'll start, you know, talking about their day, and men dismiss it because they go, well, that's not that bad. That's not that bad. Why are you whining and complaining about it? Whatever? And he has no idea that the work world today is much, much, underlying much, much more stressful to a woman than to a man. And, of course, somebody could say, John, what are you talking about? That's, you know, how can you say that? I can say that because you can measure the hormonal responses that women have in the workplace as opposed to the hormonal responses men have. There's a hormone called cortisol. Now, cortisol is the stress hormone. And for women, when they are in a competitive environment, a workplace environment, we'll call it a testosterone-stimulating environment, which is kind of a sense of emergency and urgency and deadlines and bottom lines and that kind of
and
a world.
And competition as well.
And we'll just call that the jungle. When women are in the jungle, just like for men, testosterone levels go up to cope with the jungle. That's the flight or fight response. But the difference between men and women is that testosterone helps a man to lower cortisol levels, but it doesn't help a woman to lower cortisol levels.
Uh-huh.
So women have much higher levels of stress at work. In addition, when women come home, there's a drop somewhat of cortisol on their way home. For men, it's about five times more that men's stress levels start to drop. But then as soon as she gets home, her cortisol levels jump back up to the highest level again. Literally, they double just walking in the door. Whereas for him, his continue to go down. And this is because what used to be a sanctuary, a place where women would enjoy, you know, creating a beautiful home and cooking and raising children and nurturing environment, now it becomes chaotic because there's not enough time to do what she'd like to do, to create the environment she can relax in. And so when there's not enough time, it's back to the jungle. Anytime it's urgency, pressure, it stimulates testosterone. And so women today just don't have the opportunity to experience this oxytocin hormone as much as they need to cope with stress. So clearly, women are experiencing more stress. They're under more stress. Even if they're doing the same job, it doesn't matter. They're experiencing more stress the way their bodies are designed. Then one of the ways to coping with stress, which again men don't understand, is that for women, if they can talk about the stresses in their life, then they end up feeling better. And men don't relate to that necessarily because talking about the stresses doesn't make men feel better unless it's a huge stress. If it's a big stress, then it does make men feel better. And that can be explained. I explained that in my book. There's some, basically under moderate stress, women have eight times more blood flow to the emotional part of the brain than men. If a man's experiencing a huge level of stress, then there's this, you know, big blood flow to the emotional part of the brain for him too. And that's why talking is good, is when there's a lot of blood flow to the emotional part of the brain, then if you talk about what's bothering you, that stimulates a brain chemical called serotonin that relaxes the emotional center and you feel better. So men can relate to talking about big problems. It's just the little things that men don't relate to. And so then they wonder why women are talking about all these little things, but men don't realize that women have so much more activity under stress in their brain that they need to talk about it. And also men have a reserve of serotonin. They store 50% more serotonin, backup serotonin.
Why is that?
Well, if you look historically, if we look at evolutionary, you know, somehow a few thousand years ago, whenever somebody convinced men to be the ones who go out into the jungle and stand guard and fight the battles and so forth, and to adapt to being in a flight or fight situation, men's brains store more serotonin. And serotonin is what counteracts the threat of danger. It tells you everything's going to be all right, and, hey, even if you're going to die, they'll have a parade for you. So men do have that backup serotonin, and women did not need the backup serotonin because they were in the garden. They were in the safe zone. You know, that was the role of men for thousands of years, was to create a safe zone for women to thrive in and for women to raise children in because, you know, women, you know, could make babies. And so men were the expendable ones who you sent out into the jungle, and we hope they come back, and if they do, we give them a parade, which is kind of why you know, men are happy to do that kind of stuff.
Because men get testosterone from a parade?
That's right. If you can see this, you can measure this. If you, when you acknowledge someone, it could be a man or a woman, you can acknowledge a woman and give her a parade, she'll feel good. Mm-hmm. Testosterone levels will go up, you get a sense of accomplishment, a sense of pride, and both men and women thrive in that. But the difference between men and women, this is enormously significant and new information, and that is that even though they're both feeling really good, the stress, the cortisol levels are not reduced significantly when a woman experiences increasing testosterone. Testosterone is not a major significance to a woman's sense of well-being. It's certainly important, but not nearly as important as it is for a man in his whole sense of well-being and health.
Tell me, what kind of testing do you do for this?
Well, basically what I'm doing on this is there's university studies showing all this. You know, I teach this and show couples how it works and so forth in my ranch where we do the research, and seeing how it dramatically improves. Here's the, like, one of the examples I use is that one of the techniques we use is the Venus talks. And the Venus talks are where women just talk for 10 minutes and men listen. Men don't share. Men just look. They give her the woman his full attention, and he doesn't interrupt her, and she talks. And she talks about what's going on in her life and how she feels without interruption. And what we see happening is, this is amazing, is women who can't lose weight start losing weight.
Interesting.
Now, take in mind that if, you know, these are women who are already, you know, working out in the gym, they're regular, doing some kind of regular exercise. They're eating a really good diet, but like millions of women who are actually trying to do that, women work so much harder on you know, exercise and diet and all that. As they get over 40, they just can't lose the weight. And it just keeps, for some women, it just keeps adding on. There's nothing they can do, kind of like what happens with Oprah. You know, she just yo-yos again and again and again, and she's got, you know, the best trainers, and she's got the best chefs, and she's got the best support.
Right.
But living in a testosterone environment all the time, it doesn't lower a woman's stress, and you've got to balance it. And just as 10-minute talking technique, I've seen women who could not lose weight no matter what they tried, and suddenly now they're losing 10 pounds a month. And they haven't done anything different except talking about how they feel, which is an oxytocin stimulator.
And the men don't mind doing that? Men don't find that hard?
No, this is the easiest thing in the world. If you just tell a man, now keep in mind, you got to instruct a man on what to do. If you just say to him, hey, do you want to talk? No. Who wants to talk? Well, he doesn't have a need to. But you say, oh, I'm so glad to see you. I just need to talk to you for 10 minutes. You don't have to say anything, do anything, fix anything, change in any way, or feel bad. We're not going to have any discussion about what I say. I just want to talk about what's going on. And really, I'll feel better. You just have to look my way, and it helps me to sort of sort things out, and then life looks better for me. And then as she does that, after 10 minutes, you know, she thanks him and says, thanks so much for listening. I really feel better. And then go into another room so he doesn't have the, you know, a chance to talk about it, nor does she feel the impulse to ask him, well, what do you think and how do you feel and what are you going to do about it? It really needs to be a conversation which is really pure sharing, which means that you're not expecting him to do anything about the issues that you bring up.
How did you get into all this stuff, John? Did you get some experiences that taught you some of this many years ago?
I think the main thing that got me into this was just sitting in front of women and listening to them for 8 hours a day for 10 years.
You mean as a counselor?
Yeah, as a counselor. You just, and, you know, I'm a married guy at the time. I'm still married, but at the time I'm a married guy. And most of the complaints that they have are things I hear my wife saying to me. You know, it was almost like they all had the same song, and they were all singing the same song. And that certainly helped my marriage because I realized, well, if I leave her, I'll find it somewhere else. So what do I do here? I need to just accept it and then start working on trying to hear what their needs are and respond to those needs in a way that will neutralize the problem and solve the problem. And what I saw is that what women needed most was to have the romance increased in the relationship. That was a key factor. And now,
but a lot of times men say, I don't know how to do romance.
Well, they all do. They, of course, see, men not only don't know romance, but they don't feel motivated to do romance. Romance is something that stimulates oxytocin. It's, if you go to the bookstore, for example, you'll see that only women buy romantic novels. Men don't buy them. They don't even know where the section is. It's just, this is something that feeds women, and the whole idea of men doing things for women, that's what romance is. And men don't have a clue about what this is about.
But women romance men, don't they? Don't we?
How?
Oh, telling them they're just doing great or they're handsome and you're just glad to see them and they're powerful or whatever.
That's good. Those are good things. I won't resist any of that. But men would not consider that romance.
Oh, they wouldn't. Okay.
Men would call that appreciation.
Oh,
just appreciate me. And don't tell me I'm handsome. Don't need that. But let me give me the message that I do a good job. That's what men want. And they don't consider that romance. They just consider that, you know, a loving response. And romance is what I'll define romance and the way I see it working for women.
I better get my pen out. Hang on.
Yeah, well, it's simply a man taking action to do something for a woman that it makes her feel special, that takes her out of the ordinary, where she does ordinary routine, where she doesn't have to make a lot of decisions, and he's being considerate of what her needs are, and he seeks to please her.
Hmm.
And that's what it's about. It's not about women, you know, actively doing something to please a man. But you hit it close to the nail when you said what women do to be romantic. It's not doing things for a man, but it's being especially positive and responsive. That is romantic. And if a woman is aware of that, then she knows how to create romance. Is the first thing is that when a man takes you on a date, to focus on how wonderful it is, rather than to talk about the things that go wrong on the date. And women unknowingly sabotage romance, although they're the ones who want it the most. They'll sabotage it by not knowing the way men think and feel. You know, two women could go out on a dinner date and you know, just have dinner together, chat as friends. And if the food's bad, they could have a good time talking about how bad the food is for the whole evening. And because talking about problems actually stimulates oxytocin and they'll bond. But for a man, he bonds with a woman when he feels successful. And if you talk about how bad the food is, he won't feel successful. So he ends up feeling like, well, if she's so picky, I'll let her pick the restaurant next time.
Uh-huh.
And that's the challenge for women is on these dates that he takes you on, make sure that you focus on what's good and kind of overlook what's bad. But the key to this, again, is to recognize is that men don't have the motivation, the natural motivation for romance, because to us it's sex, you know, and sex you can do at home. You don't have to go out. So what's the big deal? Now that we've gone through the romantic phase, let's just have sex and go to bed, which is
fairly practical. Bottom line.
Yeah, but it's not going to feed a woman's soul. What she needs is the romance, and the romance is him planning something and taking her and doing things for her. So to get this done, as with everything in my new book, which I talk about, if a woman's reading the book, her husband doesn't even have to read this book. A guy could read this book, and his wife doesn't even have to read this book. But for women, since the whole book really is about how to make women happier
mm-hmm.
and what they can do to support their man in supporting her to be happier. So it's not really, you know, about...
Well, that sounds like we're pretty self-centered or selfish.
That's what it sounds like. That's why women don't get what they need in relationships, is they think giving to themselves is selfish.
That's right.
And if you give to yourself, if a woman learns how to give to herself and to motivate her partner to give to her, like, for example, learning how to ask for what she wants, you know, asking him to take you on a date. If she does that for herself so she can be happy, he will be happier. The best thing you can do for men today is to be happier. Anything that can make her happier will make a man happier.
Hmm.
This is what men complain about. If they complain, they say, no matter what I do, it's not enough to make her happy. If she's happy, everything's fine.
Yeah, I've had guys, I'm also a counselor, and I've had men say, I don't care if she's chubby. I don't care about any of that. I care that she likes her body and enjoys it. And then I'm happy.
That's right. If she's happy and she's feeling good, he's happy.
Mm-hmm.
If she's not, then he can't feel successful in pleasing her. You know, you say to a woman, oh, you're so beautiful, and she says, yeah, but look at this and look at this. Then he feels, why bother even loving her? It doesn't go in. It doesn't make a difference. Men just want to feel that they can make the difference, that they make a difference in her life. So that's the gift that women can give men, is to help them be successful in making her happy. And sometimes women say, well, this sounds like a lot of work. I laugh. I say, what can please you? I mean, I'm sitting there writing a book to say, how can you be happy and how can you help him to help you be happy? It's all about her. And still women, some women will think, well, no, I shouldn't have to do anything. He should just make me happy, which is totally absurd.
He should already know. He should already know what I want.
You hit it on the nail. He should know. And he doesn't know. And that's mm-hmm. the oldest thing in the book, is that we're not mind readers. And because we're so different, we're not able to know what our partners need, nor remember, because it's not instinctive. And that's where understanding Mars-Venus is so key, is to realize all of the hormones are different. There's no hormonal payoff for a man to do romantic things for a woman. unless she's giving him signals that he's being successful.
Uh-huh.
And part of giving him signals that he's going to be successful is to ask. You know, when people don't ask you to do something, then usually it's not that important for you to do it. Men wait to be asked. You know, when guys are with guys, guys don't help each other unless they're asked to help. You know, it's even an insult on Mars to offer help to someone. If I offer help to someone, it implies that they can't do it themselves.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not an instinctive thing for men to offer help unless it's their job, unless they know what their job description is. And so that's basically asking him. But when it comes to romance, it's such a new phenomenon. You know, 100 years ago, women could care less about romance. You can still go around the world wherever there's no TV. Women could care less about romance. They have women. They spend their day with women. They get plenty of oxytocin. You know, they don't really need much from their husbands, a good provider and so forth, and that's about it. And they don't care whether their husbands listen to them. The reality today is biologically we're the same as we've always been, but the whole culture is totally different.
Hmm.
And, you know, once women had birth control, that was the big shift, is when birth control set in, now women had more choice. And women could choose to take time to develop a career, to develop their abilities, to educate themselves, to be whole persons, where they have a masculine side and a feminine side. But the problem that now we're dealing with is in becoming more masculine, women have neglected the feminine side, although they're trying, because they often, you know, they complain there's no romance, you know, there's no communication. Those two things will nourish the female side very potently, very, very powerfully. And this is what they need, because they're in the testosterone world. They need something to balance that. And so this new thing has come up, which is the need for romance and good communication with their partners. And so women have the right idea. They just don't know how to get it and how to communicate to a man what they're needing in a way that works. And let me give you a few examples of how women would think they're communicating, but they're not. She might say to him, honey, do you want to go out to dinner tonight? And he'll say no, and then she gives up. She'll say, he doesn't want to go out, as if she asked him to go out. But she didn't ask him to go out. She asked him if he wanted to go out. And to a man, you're asking what he wants. He's going to say what he wants. Sure, he'd rather stay home, watch TV, and have her make him dinner or just eat leftovers. I don't care about, you know, going out. So, but if she says to me, oh, I'm so tired, I don't want to make dinner, but I do want to eat a nice dinner, so would you take me out? And he kind of goes, oh, but probably there's some leftovers. And she says, no, I'd really like to go out. It's so much nicer, and then I want to clean up, and everything will be nice. And then he'll go, okay, I'll take you. And he might even resist a little bit. But as they get going and she starts enjoying the meal, everything changes. He'll start being in a good mood, feeling like he cooked the meal for her and he provided this wonderful evening. And that's all men want, is they just want to feel successful in making her happy. But she's got to give him the message of what's important and what's not. And the way a man knows something's important is when you ask him to do it. And the same thing with asking on a date. You just say, honey, this Saturday there's a concert, and would you get tickets and plan it? And then he'll do it. And if he balks at it a little bit, you just pause and you go, yeah, probably you want to stay home and hang out here because you're really tired. He goes, yeah. And he says, I know. It would just feel so much nicer if you're there. I could certainly go with a girlfriend, but I love it when you're there. Would you take me? And you just ask again. There's an art to asking someone. And what women think is we shouldn't have to learn that art. And they only think that because they don't know how to do it. They've never had to do it. It's a whole new thing.
Well, we're taught it was not a nice thing, really.
Say that again?
We're sort of taught, or we were raised in a culture where it wasn't the right thing to do at all.
It's right. That's correct. I mean, this whole concept of romance and creating romance alive, it really is historically a new phenomena. We're not equipped to deal with it. We don't know how to create it. It is a possibility. You know, I know couples, I talk to people who've been married, you know, in their 20, 30 years, and they still have the romance. I mean, it is possible, but they're the minority. They're the few.
So I think a lot of us were raised to think that if the fellow loves you, he will romance you, and there's that. That's that.
That's right. That's right. We hear these. And you know what's interesting to me is I often hear people talking about their parents, you know, like they had this great relationship, and you know, my dad was always loving to my mother, but you really don't know what happens behind the bedroom doors and what happens under the sheets. In previous generations, couples just stopped having sex completely. Nobody ever knows about it. Nobody ever talks about it. You know, it's amazing how many people today have been married over, you know, 7 years even, who really rarely have sex. So they have it, and it's not nearly like what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, nobody's going to advertise that and whatever. But think about it. When Viagra came out, you know, there's 20 million men who suddenly go out and buy Viagra. That means there are 20 million men who couldn't get it up.
Right.
That it's just shocking when you start seeing the statistics of what's going on. And well, then you've got 1 out of 5 women in America taking an antidepressant. And when you're taking an antidepressant, you have no libido. You lose your libido. So again, they stopped having sex. And then, you know, as we're talking about it, it sounds like, oh, you know, it sounds so trite. We're talking about sex. But the bottom line, and you're a counselor and I'm a counselor, and you know darn well that one of the first signals that couples are not communicating and connecting and they're not feeling safe and they're not being energized by each other is that they stop having sex. You know, when you're feeling safe to be with somebody, sex is a natural thing till you're 100 years old. Mm. You know, you should be healthy at 100, and if you're having sex, then you will be. And if you're not, you'll have heart disease, diabetes, cancer, all these people that are sick. If you look at their sex lives, they're almost gone.
Hmm.
You know, I read one book I remember reading. It was a whole institute where they were curing heart disease just by having men starting to have sex again.
Hmm.
It didn't go very far because it's hard to get couples to have sex. I mean, you know, sex is something you can only have with somebody over a period of time if you really feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
You can always have sex, you know, in the beginning with somebody because you don't have a history. But once you have a history of, you know, being corrected, being ignored, being, you know, feeling disappointed, and a lot of people deal with that by just saying, well, it's okay, but they just back off.
Mm-hmm.
And then the passion's gone. And then they say, well, we love each other, we're comfortable, we just don't have those feelings anymore. And I say, well, you bury those feelings. You know, you think everything's comfortable and nice, but if you don't have the attraction, the passion, the arousal, then your communication skills are limited. And if you can open up to truly understanding each other's emotional needs and communicate and behave in ways that support those different emotional needs, the passion is ignited again. And this is not just for fun or pleasure. This is a physical reality that when you're having sex, sex is the most powerful way to lower cortisol levels you can do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, this is proven. This is the maximum amount of oxytocin gets produced for a woman during sex. And so if she's having regular sex, then it's always going to be washing over her body and lowering her cortisol levels. And another thing of elevated cortisol, I was just teaching a course at Stanford with one of the most renowned, you know, hormone experts who put on that study, the national study of 65,000 women or something that were on hormone replacement. It was her. She was the one who did the study and found that it was causing cancer in women, breast cancer, as a result of hormone replacement therapy. And, you know, these doctors for 20 years were just giving women hormone replacement, and nobody had done the research. And in the middle of the study, they had to stop the study and stop the hormone replacement because it was unethical, because all the women, 30% of the women were getting breast cancer.
Oh, my Lord.
And then what she told me is then after it, 20% more got breast cancer. They'd actually had it. They didn't detect it because it was hard to detect because of the extra estrogen was masking it. So this meant 50% of the women in the study, in the time that they recorded it, all got breast cancer.
Hmm.
This is crazy. And this is, you know, what happens in the name of medicine, giving women hormone replacement, and they're getting heart disease, they're getting osteoporosis, they're getting breast cancer. And now what she's found, and this is about to be released, it's going to shock the whole system, this is the latest, is that they found that those same women are now early Alzheimer's and dementia.
Really?
This is what happens when you give women these hormone replacements. And this was known. I know neuroendocrinologists, 80-year-old guys, I was just doing a symposium, and they said all along, they studied the brain, and as soon as you add hormones to the body, the pituitary gland says, okay, if there's plenty of hormones, then we're going to stop making them. And as soon as the brain says stop making hormones, the glands that make hormones start to atrophy because they don't have a job to do. Just like your muscles, if you don't use them, they atrophy. If you don't, you know, make the hormones, your body atrophies. But why is it that women were deficient in hormones to start with? What you'll find is it comes right down to what we're talking about today, which is elevated cortisol levels.
Mm.
When the adrenal gland is making cortisol, it can't make a hormone called DHEA, which then turns into making all the other female hormones. So if your stress levels are up, your hormone levels are down.
What about post-menopause? There must be some variation there.
Well, there's huge variations in all women, but what you're talking about here is the problem with hormone production is always cortisol levels being elevated.
Mm.
And chronically, this is something you'll see in America. As people get older, their cortisol levels continue to get higher and higher.
Hmm.
Until they get something called adrenal burnout. And when you get adrenal burnout, that's this sort of fatigue that people feel as they're getting older, then that means that they've just overused their adrenal gland, and it's the adrenal gland that makes the mother hormone that makes all the other female hormones. Hmm. And certainly there is a change after menopause of women's hormones, but it doesn't mean they're to have all these symptoms of premenopause, during menopause, postmenopausal, all these symptoms that American women are experiencing. We do have models of women in Ecuador and women in Japan, places where they don't have this imbalance that we experience here, and they don't have the menopausal symptoms, they don't have the breast cancer symptoms, they don't have all these problems. So it's not necessary that women go through this. It's due to the increasing stress that we're seeing in our society. And, you know, I feel, you know, I can't lay it all just on the fact that our relationships have degraded in their value. That's only part of it. The other part of it is our diet is also degraded as well. So we have to hold, you know, both things in hand. But I think that, you know, they really go hand in hand. If you're feeling, if you're a woman and you're feeling somewhat depressed because you're isolated, you're not feeling seen, heard, you're always there for everybody else and you're feeling overwhelmed, that means your cortisol levels are going to be elevated. Then what happens is when your cortisol levels are elevated, your body cannot utilize body fat for energy. Cortisol inhibits the burning of fat for energy.
Oh, my.
So then you crave carbohydrates. And so then we have this, you know, whole carbohydrate craving that people get caught up in, where they're eating refined sugars and, they're having their coffees, but they're adding their sugar to it, and they're having their breads and their pastas and, you know, this whole enormous amount of carbohydrates and packaged foods and so forth. And that just reinforces excess cortisol as well. If you eat more than a few teaspoons of sugar, then your cortisol levels will elevate. Mm-hmm. Or if your cortisol levels are elevated, then you'll crave more than a few teaspoons of sugar.
So okay, so if we jump back into sex, we could say, okay, you can offset some of that cortisol stuff by having a good sexual life.
And, oh, absolutely.
And that's true after menopause as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. But here's the hitch to that. For a woman to experience the capacity to enjoy sex fully, she has to have normal levels of oxytocin. Then, from normal levels, it goes to high levels of oxytocin in order to climax. Hmm. So that's why men have to understand romance is so very, very important. You can't just say to a woman, let's have sex. You have to romance her, take her out on a date, look at her, appreciate her, compliment her, buy her a meal, take her to a play, bring her somewhere new and different, gaze into her eyes a little bit, and all that slowly builds up her oxytocin levels, and then at a certain point she can become sexually responsive to where she will enjoy the whole sexual experience. It's crucial that she experience high levels of oxytocin in order to experience her fulfillment. If she's not fulfilled in sex, he will gradually lose interest in her sexually as well. Men will always lose interest in any situation where they don't feel successful.
Hmm.
And while a man's, you know, seems very happy getting off in his pleasure, if she's not also enjoying the act most of the time, his body will get the message that with her he is not successful and the body just is no longer interested. So it's important that both people be mutually fulfilled in the sexual act most of the time. Sometimes you compromise. You say, okay, you're in the mood, whether it be him or her, let me take care of your needs. That's just a wonderful thing, so nobody ever feels rejected or left out. But as a general theme, if somebody's, you know, not being sexually fulfilled on a quite regular basis, you need to identify why they're not. And it comes down to they're not getting enough hormonal stimulation, or they're taking some drugs. You know, this is what happens with the SSRIs, is that you lose your, for most women, you'll lose your libido. And then suddenly, how's a man going to be interested in doing things for you when he can't sexually satisfy you?
Mm.
And this is called old age, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the male, when he uses the testosterone in a good sexual relationship, loses that at the end of it and wants to be... Then what I'm saying is it's different for men, right?
Yeah, but I don't know the point you're making.
Okay, what I was thinking is that you build it up for the woman,
yep,
but he uses it up during the sexual act.
Well, yeah, but it's a very satisfying thing, and then he sleeps.
Okay.
See, men are always like building up testosterone, then they're using it, and then they rest, kind of like, okay, accomplishment, mission accomplished kind of a thing. and then their body recuperates, and then it comes back again, and that's the whole. But to associate increasing testosterone, which is important, vital for a man's health,
mm-hmm.
Testosterone is always associated with feeling successful, and so he has to have a sense that he is successful in making her happy. And it's not just you can't fake it after a while. Some women will fake being satisfied in sex, and men will still lose interest, even though it sounds like she's enjoying it a lot, because the body knows. The body experiences its natural response to pheromones, which get produced. A woman's, pheromone scent awakens a man's sexuality. It's a big part of it, and mm-hmm. it's not the only thing that awakens a man's arousal. But if she's not producing the pheromones, his body's not going to associate success with her. And that only happens when her oxytocin levels go high. She will then produce all these pheromones.
Hmm.
So it's a very complicated thing. I mean, there's lots of different dimensions to it, but it all comes down to, like, common sense. You know, if your partner's happy, you're going to want to do that with them. If mm-hmm. if you go on a walk with your partner and they're not really happy, you're not going to want to walk with them that often.
Right, and the messages come through loud and clear, even if you don't think they do.
That's right, on many levels.
So talk about aging and this kind of stuff. This must be a better way to age, hey?
Improving. I mean, I love the new book by John Robbins, which is called Healthy at 100, where he studies the different parts of the world where people are healthy at 100. You know, they're living well beyond 100. And they're having sex lives. They're actively sexual. And men still have their high testosterone levels even at 100.
That's encouraging, isn't it?
It is encouraging. It's not like all these hormones have to drop. In the West, they drop. But look at our lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
One of the women that I really like, she was like the wisest woman and the oldest woman in the community in one story in Russia. And he said, well, what do you want to say to the people of the world? She said, I just want to say something to the women, and that when she was growing up 123 years ago,
wow.
She was, back in Russia. She said, when we were growing up, women were just slaves. We were just owned, and we were told what to do, and all we did is work, 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 work. And then we got our freedom, and we learned, that we didn't have to do everything. And this is my message to the women of the world. Don't be a slave and be happy. Don't work so hard. That was her answer. Don't work so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's wisdom for women to realize, stop working so hard. And I see women today, they're just working so hard. And I know what makes them work so hard is stress. When women, as I mentioned in the beginning of the program, when women are under stress, when their hormones are not being produced to help cope with stress, then the tendency in women is to take on more things to do.
Hmm.
And to put...
Yeah, I loved reading that because I do that. I know that.
Every woman does. I mean, this is an amazing thing. And that they put their own needs kind of at the end of the list. Mm-hmm. And the list just gets longer and longer, so they're always at the end and they never really take time for themselves. And, it can take just someone coming and reminding us that, wait a second, what's the purpose of life? Is it being nice to everybody, or is it also just being happy? And what I would say to women is to balance that tendency to want to nurture and help everybody with the recognition and the wisdom that you're here in this world to be happy, and that your happiness will give you an abundance of energy to be there for other people too. But make your happiness first. And if I was I would never give that message to men. Men already do that. See, what a man has to learn to do is to make the happiness of others more important than his own. And that's, again, my book is not about feeding men. It is about approaching men in ways that nourish him, but always from the point of view of what he can do to be successful and serving his wife and his family and the world.
Hmm.
It's what gives meaning to a man's life. And when men are too much about, well, look at what he needs, they become narcissistic very quickly and very easily. Men's needs, emotional needs, get handled automatically when he is successful and supporting others, and when he's getting messages that he's successful. That's what happens. If I was to look at what can a woman do for a man, I don't even like to look at it in those terms, but it would be, from one way of looking at it would be to not be critical of him. When you give critical messages to a man, you're not giving him what he needs, which is positive messages that he makes a difference. And so well, what do you do then? I said, well, just don't be critical. I said, does anybody want to be criticized if you're not asking for the criticism? Mm-hmm. She says, but he has to change. And I say, that's your problem. Don't try to change men. Instead, think about what you can do to change as a woman and how you respond to him and also and how you ask for what you want. So instead of saying we never go out on dates anymore, you just simply love him when he comes home and you're happy to see him and just say, oh, honey, by the way, there's this thing happening. Would you get tickets? And he'll take you, you know, and just ask and ask and ask again. That's the whole key to it. And don't feel like, well, I asked for 3 weeks. Do I have to continue doing this? Yes. This is what you do when you have a mature relationship, which is based on you want lasting romance. You have to learn how to ask for the romance. You have to ask for the communication. If you want help around the house, you have to learn how to ask. But asking somebody if they want to do something, that's not asking for help. That's asking what they want to do. And don't expect them to want to do that.
And they'll answer you.
That's right.
I love your list, 100 Ways for a Woman to Create Oxytocin on Her Own. And then the other one was, I think, 100 Ways for Men to, what is it?
Men to create oxytocin for women.
Yes. I love that because a lot of us go, well, what do we do now? You know, and it's really clear in this book. I also loved your little stories. I can't quote any right now, but the little scenarios of people at home. I laughed. I was telling my partner, every one of them seems like us.
Well, that's what a lot of people feel. They say, have you been following me around? I mean, you know, what I do is I pick examples that I hear again and again and again that are also relevant and true in my life. Every one of those examples is from my life as well as many other people. Certainly, we all have more idiosyncrasies and unique things that may not relate to everybody, but there is a theme that relates to most people that I continually approach in this book, which is to give us a sense that, first of all, we're not alone, and second, that this is the way things are, and we can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools that I suggest in this book, you know, the Venus talks, the Mars talks, the ways of interacting, asking for what you want, ways to respond, ways to ask, ways to avoid arguments, ways to make up after arguments, all those practical tools, when couples learn those, I've seen over and over and over and over and over again, I see couples fall in love and make a good relationship better. Couples who are ready to divorce fall in love again and have a great relationship as a result of it. So I see tremendous hope for lasting, loving, passionate, romantic relationships in this world. In a world where most people don't experience that, I see that it's possible if they would just take the time to educate themselves. The problem is so many people just don't know that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They think they know it all. And they think that if they have problems, that it's their partner's fault, or that they picked the wrong person.
Or that they're always like that, and that's a fait accompli, and that's that.
That's it. That's what it is. And as opposed to, well, wait a second, maybe I have something to do with this equation, and maybe I could make this situation better. And then they'll come back to, but I've tried everything. And I go, you certainly haven't tried what my book talks about. And because nobody has. I mean, this is really amazing new stuff, original stuff. I'm on the cutting edge always on this. You know, I speak at all the relationship conferences. I know all the books because everybody sends me their books so I can do endorsements on them. So I see everything. And the simplicity of this book and the ideas that I suggest are so cutting edge and so new and so easy that, you know, in my own career of teaching this over 30 years, you know, the things in this book I've only been doing for the last 5 or 6 years, and it has made my own marriage so much easier, from already a great marriage, but one that just says, it's just like added super fuel to it or something.
Oh, and that's a good endorsement right there.
Really has made it better and better, and I see people in my workshops, you know, at my ranch. I do them every month. I do about 40 people where I work very closely with people, and some are couples and some are single people. And I get their feedback, and again and again and again, it just awakens them to a new understanding. And once we begin to truly understand, then all of the misinterpretation stops happening. You see, when we don't understand, we will always misinterpret.
We make assumptions, don't we?
That's right. We have all these kinds of assumptions, which are based on unrealistic expectations.
Or history.
Exactly.
I want to say something about the culture that we live in here in the U.S. I'm going, this could... If enough people pay attention to this book, for example, this could change the whole culture, couldn't it?
Well, I think, without trying to be modest here, but the Men from Mars, Women from Venus series of books has changed our culture, without a doubt. But it is only one level. It's more of an awareness of how men and women are supposed to be different. But this is a whole nother level. This is, you know, on the curve. You know, I'm just on the cutting edge of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the expanding that awareness into the reality that this is so biological and that there are actual physical reasons for these differences. And that frees people from that sense of thinking something's wrong with our partner, something's wrong with us, or we just can't change them, realizing that nobody really needs to change so much. It's more that we just need to change our approach. You know, that, you know, I'm always trying to walk through this wall and bump at my head, and really there's a door right over to the right, and I can just turn the knob and the door will open and boom. Something that I thought was impossible to get out of this room, suddenly I can get out of it or get into it or whatever. And this is what this new book talks about is understanding how we're biologically different. Try these new things. In the beginning might seem a little awkward, like a Venus talk, which means that the woman talks and the man doesn't. And women go, well, I don't want a one-way conversation. I say, try it and see. It's an amazing reaction you'll have. Or a Mars talk, where in a Mars talk, it's when you ever have a disagreement, you say, okay, let's do a Mars talk. You can't bring feelings into it. How many times have I seen couples start talking about their feelings and just hurting each other? Feelings mm-hmm. are very delicate. You know, if you have a conversation about money, say, and a woman says, well, I'm worried that this is going to happen, the guy's going to immediately say, well, don't be worried. That's not going to happen. That's going to hurt her feelings because now you've told her not to feel what she feels. And that is just, it's painful to her. Now her defenses go up and the whole conversation goes down south.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you leave feelings out of it. If you just call a truce, you say, okay, we'll leave feelings out of it. We're going to follow these certain rules. Kind of like two boxers in a ring. There's certain rules they follow so they don't hurt each other. Same thing in an argument between a couple. If they can just follow a few rules, which are almost contrary to everything every therapist has taught their clients. I won't say every therapist, but very common is, you know, tell your partner, use I sentences, I feel this, I feel that. And then you get your feelings hurt. Feelings
right.
are vulnerable. They're tender.
Right.
So if you're disagreeing on things, leave feelings out of it. If you need to talk about feelings, then stop trying to solve the problem. And instead, let's try to just hear feelings.
Right.
Because feelings and problem solving, just are like oil and water, they don't mix. And you just go, let them be separate. Unless there's, you know, if you're pretty much in agreement, then you can certainly bring feelings into it. But when there's disagreement, feelings just get hurt. And so once feelings have been hurt, then how do you apologize? And a lot of couples just don't know how to make up and how to apologize, how to learn to let go of things and move on. And if you keep bringing things up from the past, your partner's never going to be motivated to love you again or open up. If they apologize and they're ready to make a change and they make a change, you can't keep bringing up the past. So I help couples learn how to let go of the past, be in present time, work with what they're getting right now and move forward into the future. And these are a lot of powerful skills that anybody can apply and have a better relationship. And this is not just for married people, but single people. You know, so much of, you know, people say, well, I don't need that. I'm not even in a relationship. And I say, well, why aren't you in a relationship? And if they've just never been in one, well, if you're going to go skiing, you want to take a lesson before you do it. And, of course, most of us have all been in relationships. And the best thing to start a new relationship is to be able to look back at your past relationships and recognize where it went wrong, not from the point of view of blaming the other person or blaming yourself, but recognizing how you misunderstood each other, how you misinterpreted each other, how, if you were in that situation today, you could have made it much better.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that kind of confidence that you recognize your mistakes in the past and how you could have done it differently with this new knowledge, then you're going to have a new kind of relationship. But if you don't have new knowledge after a relationship, you're going to have the same old kind of relationship.
You're right. Well, our time is up, but I have so much enjoyed this, and the effect of this time is certainly not up. Why Mars and Venus Collide by John Gray. This is a wonderful book. What I've read so far just lifted me, actually.
Well, I appreciate that so much. And if it did lift you, and I appreciate that comment, I'd love for you to go on the internet on one of the bookstores and give your comment. It's always nice to have some positive comments about my book.
That'd be great. And talking about the internet, if people check your website, can they find out about your, is it a spa or is it a...
Oh, my wellness retreats.
Yes.
Well, I do have a spa at my wellness retreats where mm-hmm. people can enjoy as well. But it's once a month. It's at my ranch in Northern California, and it's on my calendar, and you can find out more information at marsvenus.com.
Excellent.
And also at that site, you can find down there a button that says TV. And I have a weekly TV show as well that people can connect with and hear more about Mars-Venus Collide.
Wonderful. We'll check it out. Well, thank you so much for your time, and I've really enjoyed this. I've learned a lot.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Well, that was John Gray, and I've learned a lot about relationship, and I hope you have too. It's a wonderful book, but I'm also going to check his television shows on venusandmars.com. This is Veronica Entwistle on Paradigm Shifters, ending again. And next week on Paradigm Shifters, we have the channel Amaji, who channels Mafu. Mafu is a wonderful, wonderful, kind of a something like Ramtha in that he's a sort of a warrior being. I don't think he's ever been human. He is just somebody I studied with many years ago and has taught. He's got very strong spiritual teachings and very, very commanding presence. But he's been talking a lot in the DVDs that I got as a sampler before we do the show are all about how you can manifest and the clarity of your soul's purpose and so on. This should be a really, really exciting and uplifting show. So tune in next week at 5 o'clock West Coast time here on wonderful BBS radio to talk or to listen to. This isn't a call-in show. Amaji, who channels Mafu, M-A-F-U. I think that, I can't remember the name of the website, but you can Google Mafu and learn about their system by checking the web. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for tuning into Radiance by Design. I hope to talk to you next week and on Radiance by Design, followed soon after that by Paradigm Shifters. I'll be on with Jackie Salvitti on ET Healing Thursday night at 8 p.m. And I send you much love and many blessings.